Horsemic scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We have the Battle of Souls podcast, joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey everybody.
And Adam Camilleri.
Hey, g'day. Return of the Queen. Let's go.
Welcome back. It's been a couple of weeks. There's going to be a lot of 40K talking about this weekend. There's a couple of Codex previews coming up, mission previews coming up, and I'd like to spend this time, if we can't, talking about the missions, because I think that's actually what's going to affect most people, you know, with their 40K experience.
For sure. It's the biggest change to the majority of people's, the majority of the game for people.
I can already hear some folks with like, oh, changes to this. Look, you don't have to make any changes to the way you play, but the game, you know, is going to continue to evolve in some way. And if you choose to go with the Prior Nexus mission cards, you're going to find some changes, which may, if you were maybe not as having as much fun or kind of played out the old missions, this is going to give you like a little bit of infusion in lifeblood going into this next season.
Well, the first thing I really like is just every now and then just mixing up the deployment suite. Like the suite of deployments is just they just refresh it every now and then. Some of them are very much the same as we all know, and they all have the OG names back. Hammer and Anvil is Hammer and Anvil. Dawn of War is Dawn of War. But there's a couple that have changed. Sweeping Engagement is now, I want to call it the bookcase. I'm not really sure why I want to call it the bookcase deployment, but that's some reason what it feels like to me, because you have like, it's long table deployment. So it's Dawn of War deployment, but you have a bit of a cliff. So where you are a little bit closer to your opponent on one side, they're a little bit further away, and then vice versa. So it's like a yin. It should be called the yin and yang. It should be called yin and yang. Okay, I just redid it.
It does look a little bit like that for sure, and it extends. You basically split the board into four quarters, but you can deploy along the long table edge. One of those quarters, your deployment zone goes out to 14 inches. The other quarter, your deployment zone goes to 8 inches, and reverse that on the opposite table quarters for your opponent, who also gets the full table edge. It's not, so you're still deploying. It's not like you're having category deployment. You're deploying along the long table edge, but half of the board, you get a wider bit to deploy in.
Yeah, it's very hard to explain with just an audio medium, but you'll know when you see it.
There's also one called the Tipping Point, which is a similar layout for the Hammer and Anvil style. And, you know, this is, to me, I think it may be in response to maybe some of the way that the game's been going, and especially with now that terrain layouts have started to become solidified, and there's also like longer movements and more things that can kind of advance and charge and dynamic. That whole Dawn of War deployment that used to be kind of like innocuous and safe, and maybe like your starter deployment or whatever, has become a little more perilous.
It really has. Some people dread it, some people love it, but it is the OG. It is where we all kind of started with all of our games. And it is the, I always see it as the stock standard, it down.
Dawn of War is what we're talking about. Long table edge, 12 inch from the edge. That's your deployment zone. The one we all know and love. If you've been playing this game for a long time, you know it is what we might consider the very much standard. I just think the nature of it has changed a bit as some of the abilities of the armies have changed. And, you know, going talking about the terrain setups and things, we often talk about the beloved Baneblade.
Yes, which I'm taking to an event this weekend. There you go.
You champion.
I took it to a team event and it did very well. So let's go.
We are just peoples of culture on this show.
That's right.
So only the most cultured.
That, certain terrain layouts and the way that, you know, we've kind of come to adopt what is kind of the U.S. Open style series of terrain with firing arcs and lanes and that kind of stuff and deployment. In that type of deployment zone, it's even more difficult to effectively deploy some of those larger units. I think maybe in the Sweeping Engagement and what the Tipping Point, the Hammer and Anvil Tipping Point deployment we're just talking about, may allow for more flexibility with some of those larger models.
Definitely would have been a consideration for sure. Because like you said, in Dawn of War, and the reason I guess people have seen Dawn of War as a bit more punishing than usual is because, of course, everyone wants to hide as much of their army as they can turn one. With such a wide frontage, it's much easier to get a flank, get a line of sight, you know, down the back of a ruin. And then if you're playing against a pressure opponent and they, you know, go first and get up the board against you, there's nowhere to go. You can't really back up. You can't really, you know, play for space. You kind of just gotta respond. And so I like Dawn of War because it means the game happens. There's no, you know, tap dancing around, walking on eggshells. You got to get stuck in. And even if it's a punishing matchup, you got to find a way. You got to find a line of play that's going to get you further into it. And so I've always been a fan of Dawn of War, but I do see the crit. I do see where it can be a bit of a, you know, punishing in some situations. Deployment.
I'm a huge fan. Maybe it's nostalgia, and maybe I just feel like that, you know, well, of course, everyone, you know, this is what we're all going to do and can expect. But I like that the Prior Nexus mission pack has challenged that a bit and maybe, you know, given some breath and relief to players that may be frustrated with that. Something that seems super innocuous on the surface level, but when we actually start playing the game, has maybe some challenges for some army types, but we'll see.
For sure.
So those are a couple. You are correct. That was the old school names back. And then we've got some other things too. The Crucible of Battle gives you a quarter across what might be considered the hammer and anvil side of things there. And then a few more deployment types. Of course, if you're playing with the mission cards and you're pulling them out and doing random deployment, you may flip it randomly. You just choose. Tournament packs, oftentimes the organizers will choose preset what those each round is in the deployment zone.
And I do think it's a great tool to give to the TOs that if they have a certain kind of feel or structure to an event that they're playing, they can choose to omit or add different deployment maps to their, you know, their number of rounds. And so if they want a certain feel to their event, you know, first round, you know, if you've got a bunch of players and you don't want a huge amount of draws, slap down the new sweeping engagement. If you want, turn five to be over quick so people can pack up the event, you know, hammer it. Let's go Dawn of War. Let's go. Let's get some results. Let's get stuck in.
Got to get that award ceremony happening.
Right.
In addition to the changes with some of the deployment types, there's also a different type of dynamic ability for the missions that is different than the gambits. And I know that a lot of people out there, I think people would be hard pressed to effectively describe how gambits function for them.
I've never done one. I've never met somebody who's done one, but I hear it's fun.
Well, I think it's a difficult thing to judge. It's like, well, when do I go for the gambit and when do I don't? How am I even in it enough to wear a gambit and trying to be cute is going to work? Or should I just try to play out the mission and keep it tight?
Well, it seems like Games Workshop has identified that the gambit system wasn't as impactful as they wanted it to be, and they've revamped it, which I think is a great idea.
Now we have secret missions. Secret missions are challenging covert goals you can pursue if the primary mission seems in jeopardy. At the end of the third battle round, starting with the player who has the second turn, if your primary mission victory point total is less than or equal to your opponent's, you can choose to undertake a secret mission. If you do, secretly select one card from your secret mission deck and place it onto one side face down. You cannot score more than 20 victory points from the primary mission card. Any excess victory points awarded above this maximum are lost. At the end of the battle, reveal your secret mission card to your opponent. If you've achieved the goal described on the card, you score victory points as described on the card. So, you know, a little risky, of course, but if you're down, seem like things not going your direction, I do like the ability. And I like the theme, the intent of the game that's allowed you to climb back in it. Maybe this will be a little straightforward.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that with the gambits, my biggest problem with them is that it still came down to a dice roll. Like, you could try your best to maneuver around the table and get yourself set up, but you could still just roll very poorly on the dice and just lose, you know? So, and it looks like they've taken that out of these secret missions. So for that, I'm very happy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly right. I was always of the opinion that the gambit portion should just be confined to the choice to no longer score primary. That's the gambit. You're giving up a certainty of score for a potential of score. And then jumping through the extra terms and conditions was always the bit that felt like that was the Rubicon too far. Like that was the lines, the brass ring you wouldn't be able to reach. And so removal of that, I think, is the biggest reduction in barrier to entry to playing with this mechanic.
I hope folks dig it. Actions are back.
Yes. I mean, we always had actions, just they weren't called actions.
Sure.
And now they've acquiesced and realized that, hey, deploying actions are a thing. Yeah, exactly right. Everyone was doing actions, actions, actions. But now they're named actions again. Yay.
So actions are your forces can attempt during a daring battlefield task to turn the conflict in your favor. That's the flavor text here. And basically some cards, the mission cards, secondaries, will require you to perform an action, and it will tell you when to do it, when it's completed, so on and so forth.
There's big changes to the actions, though, because you can't use OC0 things to do them anymore.
This is big.
Correct.
Big, huge.
Huge.
Yeah, your Nurglings, they're not the ubiquitous score machines that they were.
Nope, my Cyclops demolition vehicles, I'm probably not going to see as much play.
Well, the other amazing thing that they've done, and this is, I think, the biggest and most impactful thing in this packet, is the incentivizing battle line units. So now this is a whole rabbit hole that we could launch into and or tangent, but for the longest part there, if you had to have a very good battle line unit to even take any battle line units, or you took the minimum needed to achieve the effect. But then there are armies that their modus operandi is the fact that they have a super good battle line unit and they get to build their army around it. Death Guard and Thousand Suns being the two biggest indicators of this. If you have a really well-rounded battle line unit, that just means your army's probably going to have a leg up on the opposition now. And if you don't have a great battle line unit, you need to try and find ways to get value from them in this mission pack. And I think this is exceptional. I think this is great because for the most part, what we thought of as in the longest times ago, the days of yore, if you will, you couldn't score objectives unless your unit was essentially a battle line unit. They had to be the core of your army, your infantry squads, your baseline unit of your army. And we went away from that a bit in 8th edition, went away from it more in 9th edition. And then it seems like it was a mechanic that didn't do anything in 10th edition or had no purpose to it. Essentially, whenever someone says, oh, that's a unit's a battle line, I just means in my head they're 2OC instead of being 1OC, objective control, that is. And which was kind of ubiquitously just how it was. But now there is real purpose behind these units and reasons to, I think, have much more well-rounded armies out there in the field, which I think is really cool.
I like the sound of that. You know, finally, power armor's great. I'm kidding. That's a little bit of a joke.
Power armor's been free for a while now.
I was about to say, explain. No. No.
Look, we had a long time that power armor was not cool, but as soon as you mentioned that some armies seem to be incentivized, I did immediately go to that marine equivalent that seems like, you know, might be something you see more of those to put on the table, more of those actual types of boots. If you're familiar with the missions as they are now, if you're flipping them randomly off the cards, you would pick a deployment, then you would flip a mission rule. And one of the mission rules that has kind of become the tournament standard is Chilling Rain. Chilling Rain basically means there is no mission rule. There is no other layer of complexity or rule or whatever on top of just whatever the mission itself is. And Chilling Rain is not in here anymore.
My mates and I joked that the secondary mission was weather when we had Chilling Rain. that was how we called it. What's the secondary mission? Oh, it's weather. Okay, fair. We're a little muddy today. That's about it. But I'm happy to hear that. And we're going to have more X factor. We're going to have more often something of influence and consequence happening. And we're going to have to play the mission more robustly.
Well, there are some things that I think may still get chosen as just more of the default things. And like, there's one mission rule, adapt or die. It's not as drastic as it sounds. for players using fixed missions, once per battle, at the end of the player's turn, after scoring any victory points, they can discard one of their secondary mission cards and replace it with another secondary mission card that has the fixed mission symbol. If you're using tactical missions, twice per battle, after drawing a secondary mission card, that player can draw another secondary mission card, then shuffle one of those two secondary mission cards back into their secondary mission deck.
I like it.
Yeah, here's another one. Fog of War. In the first battle round, units have the benefit of cover, and players cannot use core stratagems excluding the new orders stratagem.
Yes, this is very impactful. Similar to Scrambler Fields, where we just now have a portion of the mission structure that will just curb Alpha Strikes. We had something similar added in, I can't remember if it was an 8th edition, where if you were going second, you could pay command points to just have your whole army count as being in cover. Now that's kind of enshrined as just one of the rules. And so I like this a lot. I think this is a good mix-up.
Prepared positions, another mission rule. These are not cumulative. These are going to be one thing for a mission.
One of these, yeah.
Yeah. So I did not want to make it sound like these were all linked together in something, but this is, you pick the mission, get the mission rule. Prepared positions is players can target their battle line units with a go to ground and heroic intervention stratagems for 0 command points, but cannot do so if they've already used that stratagem on a different unit that turn.
Yep. So the question is here, do you do it for free and then pay for it? And is that just how this has to be? but I would say that no, the intent is here that you get one for free, you take it, you enjoy it, and you're happy to have it.
These are a few things that I think people will gravitate towards, because if you're playing like a pickup game or a theme game or a narrative game, then of course, you can kind of just dictate what you're going to play or flip it like random or whatever you want to do. In an event, in match play events, sometimes they like to have that predictability, one less thing of randomness taken out of it. Also in speed of play, it's just there. Both players could have read it before they even got to the table. So I'm curious as to which ones the organizers will gravitate towards as those, since it's not... There's not one with just no effect.
Yeah, exactly right. So what will be the new default is what you're saying. Because that's exactly what Chilling Rain was. Like, oh, we've used all the ones that we think, are good for this round of the event. Slap Chilling Rain down.
I don't mind that, by the way. Again, I really think that when you can kind of minimize what some of that, maybe that reliability that players want, the predictability, then so be it.
At events, no one wants to feel like they were out of contention because of a mission rule. But if they're always going to be impactive mission rules, now that we've taken away that there is no default, nothing, people have to build for them. Mm-hmm. You have to build your army with these things in mind. And I think that's better. It makes people have to ask more questions of what will function and what will do well, rather than just being like, well, I know 3 out of my 5 are going to be Chilling Rain at this GT. And so therefore I don't really care too much. As long as Scrambler Fields doesn't come up, my army is good to go. I can take all my infiltrators and all my scouts and blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
Oh, what are y'all's feelings on pre-publishing the missions that will be used in the order that you will see them for match play events?
I'm a variety guy. I'm the box of chocolates. I like some where I know exactly, like if I'm going to a 200 player super major and I want to do as well as I can do, I'd like to know beforehand. If I'm just rocking up to my local RTT, if I'm rocking up to a 50 player event and I'm just going to have some fun, let's keep it rando. Let's just rip them off the top. The TO can do it in front of everybody, hold them up as they go and hear people groan or cheer.
I feel like I'm a very casual player. I may go to events, but like I don't remember what the missions are round. So like if they want to publish them, great. If they don't want to, great. It literally doesn't affect me at all.
Yep. Fair. Cool. Like look, your list is set. You gotta play it no matter what, right?
That's it.
Nothing wrong with that.
There are some new primary missions. I don't know if y'all have got any that stand out, particularly for y'all, you want to dive into.
No, not as of yet. I'm just really excited to feel my way through this once again. Some of these are what you would expect, like the ritual is still very much the ritual. Taken Hold is still here. Unexploded Ordnance is one that sounds pretty fun to me. So I'm just going to read this one out for you guys. The objective markers that start on the battlefield in No Man's Land are hazard objective markers. And the action is, at the start of your shooting phase, one or more units from your army, each within range of a different hazard objective marker you control. It completes at the end of your turn if the unit performing this action on the marker is still there and has control of it. If completed, you can move each of those hazard objective markers up to 6 inches. When doing so, the objective marker cannot end their move on top of any other objective marker or model and not in impassable terrain. And then the end of each player's turn, the player whose turn it is scores victory points as follows: 8 victory points for each hazard objective marker that is wholly within their opponent's deployment zone, 5 victory points for each hazard marker that is wholly within 6 of their opponent's deployment zone, and 2 victory points for all within 12 of the deployment zone. So this is similar to what we had with Deploy Servo Skulls, where you kind of you played the guy in the soccer game, kind of kicking the objectives around. And they've given it a little bit of a facelift, and hopefully that'll see it have a little bit more play, because it was a very much, I go first, I scout and infiltrate onto the objectives, and I kick them all towards you, cash in big time, and just run away with my lead.
And it's the same, too, with the primary victory points are capped at 50, secondary 40, and then your battle rate is 10. So that part has not changed. If you're using fixed missions, it's 20 victory points maximum per fixed mission card.
Yeah. And then, I mean, a lot of these are quite similar. And I do think if I agree with what they've done here, a lot of the primary missions were very good. You know, good old supply drop, Scorched Earth. These are a lot of very good missions, you know, Purge the Foe. They've mostly kept them relatively stable, just a kind of light facelift for the most part. But it was the secondaries that I am really keen to see revamped. And they've done a good job.
I think this is the changes here, and some of the modifications have been like really highly backed by data.
Exactly right. Well, we've got thousands and thousands of games logged in various places for them to refer to. And it looks like they've definitely taken them into account.
And player experience, I think, matters a bit too. And I'm really looking forward to getting these missions, like a full-on go with them to see. Because some of the changes are, you know, very blatant. Like, oh, that's different. Some of the things are kind of subtle, like the hazards one you were just talking about. Kind of curious how that all plays together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I just say that I really appreciate the changes to the layout of the cards? Like, it's very clear now, like, when things are scored, if it's a this condition or a this condition in order to score points. It's very well laid out. It looks very well thought through, and I'm very appreciative of it.
Like that whole GUI, that user experience, like, really does matter. Because there's nothing worse, like, when you're staring at the card and you're like, wait, did I do that wrong? But did I somehow not get these points?
You've been sitting there, you've read it three times, you're still no closer to understanding if you actually understand it or not.
Here's a cool one. Terraform. Terraform is an action. During your shooting phase, one or more units from your army, each, this is the primary mission, one or more units from your army, each within range of a different objective marker that is not within your deployment zone and has not been terraformed, complete the, and this is, you do it in this phase, who can do it, when it's finished, completes the end of your opponent's next turn or the end of the battle, whichever comes first. If a unit performing this action is still within range of the same objective marker and you control that objective marker. If completed, each of those objective markers is terraformed. Then you score points. So, I mean, look, there's stuff to do.
Absolutely. Another one that I really like, and of course, I wanted them to really mix up the fixed objectives choices. I thought that's a great thing for them to do, you know, season by season, every 6 to 12 months, you know, change the goalposts on which missions you can select as fixed. Storm Hostile is still one of the fixed, as is Engage on All Fronts. Recover Assets, I believe, is a new fixed objective option, and it's an action in your shooting phase. Two or more units from your army, each of those units wholly within a different one of the following areas: your deployment zone, no man's land, and your opponent's deployment zone. It completes at the end of your opponent's next turn or the end of the battle, whichever one comes first, if either two or three of those units are on the battlefield. If these units, if it completed, the units recover their assets, and at the end of your opponent's turn, this is how it's scored, or at the end of the battle, two of your units recover assets this turn, 3 victory points. Three of your units recover assets this turn, 6 victory points. So you need to be in your deployment zone, no man's land, and their deployment zone, all with all three units doing an action and surviving until your opponent's next turn. But you cash in 6 if you're able to do it. So it pays out big time. But naturally,
tough right now in the game is, although, you know, terrain. Well, it does matter.
I was about to say, it's not unrealistic to do it for 3 points with reliability in your deployment zone and the no man's land, which you should be, you know, battling over anyway. And then, you know, reaching maybe even on just the last turn of the game to get a 6 could pay out pretty well. It could be pretty reliable.
Yep. These are completely laid out differently. You'll see them on the cards. Like Tanya was talking about, it's like really clear, like even different colors of things that don't really draw your eye to what you can or should be looking at when you draw these missions or choose them as you're fixed.
So the one I think people want to know about the most is Deploy Teleport Homers, because this was the ubiquitous too good secondary. If you didn't know, if you were taking fixed, if you knew your opponent gave up, bring it down, you would just slap it with Deploy Teleport Homers. Oh, you can get an engage on our fronts, slap it with Deploy Teleport Homers. It was like, this one is not fixed. So is more than fixed, because it's almost mandatory. It was just too good. And now it's called Established Locus is the same similar effect. And yes, it can be taken as a fixed. It is an action. It's in your shooting phase. One unit from your army. Each at the end of your turn, if your unit was within your opponent's deployment zone or within six of the center of the battlefield, it's completed and you establish a locus. At the end of your turn, your unit establishes a locus turn and is within six of the center of the battlefield is 2 VP. And if they establish the locus in your opponent's deployment zone, is worth 4 CP. 4 VP. 4 CP. Geez, that'd be...
Yes!
Different metric. So it's very much the same, but the change comes in the fact that you can't be doing this with Nurglings. You can't be doing this with zero OC units anymore. And so the little bits and pieces we used to use to scramble together these points. Yeah, exactly right. They have changed apps in totality from the way we would now activate this. So you have to actually use real units to get your you know, now deployed.
That's going to be tough.
Well, it's going to be a lot harder, and people will have to build units into their army to do so. You know, just so happens that you're already very much incentivized to take battle line units, and battle line units, if you don't have a, you know, supercharged build around battle line unit, case in point is Plague Marines, where if you take 40 of them, you've just got a good army. It doesn't matter the rest of your army. You're starting at a good baseline. But, you know, people who have, say, 10 guardsmen in infantry, you know, they're not a huge asset damage dealing wise. They're very good roadblock, very good flexibility option. You know, they're going to come out with two special weapons. Whoop-de-doo, might as well get some established locus.
Yeah. Here's another one. Sabotage. I kind of like this one. It's an action, starts in your shooting phase. One unit from your army that is within a terrain feature and not within your deployment zone completes at the end of your opponent's next turn or the end of the battle, whichever comes first, if your unit is on the battlefield. If completed, your unit commits sabotage. Don't set it straight.
Cute Beastie Boys soundtrack. You should do that, by the way. You should have that lined up on your phone and do the "It's time to sabotage."
Yeah, it's off. I was about to say we can't play it here. We don't own the rights. And
we will get demonetized.
Patreon is not that good to Beastie Boys.
Such a lawsuit.
But end of your opponent's turn or the end of the battle, your unit committed sabotage this turn and is not within your opponent's deployment zone, get 3 victory points. If you commit that sabotage in your opponent's deployment zone, that you get another big juicy 6 VP.
Yeah, it's nice. Not a fixed as well, we should point out. You can't take that one as fixed.
Yeah, but that's one of those ones to where that if you kind of like feel like you're maybe due that card in your deck, it may influence when you get a little risky.
Yeah. So how many, I'm just going to do a quick count while you guys probably pontificate, because we had 16 cards previously. I haven't actually counted how many we have now. I wouldn't have minded if they've gone up to say 20, 25, because what would often happen is you, at high levels of play or even any level of play, sorry, I shouldn't make that delineation. You would have people like thinking about what they have scored and what they have left. And on the last turn, they're like, well, I got a 50-50 of ripping this card, so I'm going to move over here. And that stuff, while being really cool, does take a little bit away for me. Does take a little bit off the top.
Same thing, too. I'm not going to go claim that objective because I don't want me being there with a weak unit for you to take it back and score your objective that you're due to flip that. Like, I don't mind that type of analysis because it is a little bit of risk versus reward. You still have to play.
Correct. Out, hope. Well, I would like to say, just counting the cards now, we now have 18. So up by a couple.
I throw that man way off.
As somebody who quite often plays at the lower tables, there is a change to a lot of the cards, not a lot, but like to a few of the cards that feels really good to me. And I don't know, you guys obviously are more capable players than me, but sometimes I'd be left with like 2 units left on the board and I'd be like, okay, it's really going to come down to like the draw, whether or not I'm able to do anything on my last turn. And now a few of the cards, if you have less than 3 units left on the board, they just say to shuffle it back into your deck.
Yeah,
which is really good. Those circumstances is just like an extra, it's like basically a free draw. You get to try again to score points with your 2 units that you have left. And I think it's actually a pretty nice change for me.
Yeah, because there was nothing worse than having the game in a winnable position and then having a dead draw off the top of the deck.
Yeah.
And that's what you're saying. That feel bad is much reduced.
Yes. I like it.
In line with that, and I agree completely, this Call of the Horde, which is a secondary mission here, is that it even states when drawn, If there are no enemy units on the battlefield that satisfy either of the conditions required to achieve this card, you can discard this card and draw a new secondary mission card. And Call of the Horde means you got to kill big units or fat units.
Well, this is one of the missions that have this is one of the secondaries that has been missing, I think, for a little while. Especially, this is so important with the way the meta is kind of going at the moment, where we're seeing much more incentivized unit sizes. We're seeing, you know, Green Tide's a thing, Unending Swarm is a thing, you know, at any point Necrons can decide they just want to take phalanxes again, or you know, demons are definitely a
Chaos
thing,
even cultists, their units are demons.
Yeah, cultists are absolutely a thing. There's a couple of detachments in the Chaos Space Marines book that tells you to take big old squads, and I think this is really important to get this back in. So this can be taken as fixed and essentially is the other side of the coin to bring it down. So when this card is active, each time an enemy infantry unit is destroyed, if one or more of the following conditions are satisfied, you score 5 victory points. The starting strength of the unit destroyed was 20. So even if they're not even, so actually it's going to be interesting. So it's when it's drawn. The starting strength is 20. So even if there's two guys left from a 20 boys unit, that would qualify, I believe.
Yeah, starting strength of the destroyed unit was blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's not starting strength at the battle round. It's starting strength when, you know, in your list. And then the total wounds characteristic of models in the destroyed unit was 25 plus. So that would be things like Terminators, you know, 30 wounds in 10 Terminators, etc. So I think this is extremely good. But for the purposes of the above condition, models in attached leader units are ignored. So you ignore, you know, if you've got, let's say, Ghazghul Thraka and a unit of Meganobs, he doesn't count for whatever 20,000 wounds that he has towards this qualification.
Well, yeah, because starting strength of the unit, I got you.
Yeah. So you can't be like, well, you dingus, you attached, you know, 11 wounds worth of command squad or something or other to your 10 infantry, and now it's worth 5 VP. So that doesn't quite work, which is good. That's good.
But I think this is, you know, you pointed out being able to pick as a fixed objective might be a little ambitious, but if you could rack up 5 a turn for 4 turns, then
well, exactly right. So there is this meta right now, and with it, forgive the colloquialism being used by the community, it's called being put in jail. And what that delineates is that someone goes first on turn one and then essentially lines your deployment zone and locks you in, as in, like, you've been put in jail and you've got to fight your way out of it. And there wasn't really any way to punish people for doing that before. There was no downside to just locking off the table from your opponent and just using a unit of gargoyles to completely line off and to keep someone contained so they can't really contest a primary, and there's so many cards that they can pull off their deck that they can't score. But now, if you know someone's going to do that and I built that kind of list, you'd be like, well, I get 5 points a turn for killing the screen that I have to kill to play the game. And it gives you a much more interplay into that list, much more interplay into those types of interactions, which I think is absolutely necessary and well done.
I'm digging it. Those just an example of the new secondary cards, new mission rules, new terrain formats. Seems pretty good. And actually, is there? I know we're talking about being 5 points a turn, but I don't know that if you pick them as your fix that you can't just max them out.
Yeah, exactly right. We'll have to that would be delineated in the top section, right? If you're selecting fixed objectives, master the symbol shown after revealing 2 fixed mission cards, set aside the remainder of your secondary deck. Your secondary fix cannot be discarded for any reason other than adapt or die mission rules. So as far as I can tell, and there isn't anything to denote that you score less points if you take them as fixed now. Because it used to say, if you take this as fixed, you'll get these points instead of these points. Those aren't here. So unless there's a condition somewhere in the
it's just a max. You can't score more than 20 per card.
That's right. Yeah.
But I think you could, like, conceivably do it. If you could do it all in one round, you could just get your 20 and move on.
Oh, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
You score it more than once. Yeah. I don't want to burst your bubble. But it says anytime one of these conditions are met, when you get these victory points.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Is like, I think you could do it multiple times a round.
Each time an infantry unit is destroyed, if one or more of the following conditions are satisfied, you're correct. I think you were spot on, brother.
So, you know, the maneuver that you're talking about is like throwing 2 or 3 units across the table to lock folks up. That if someone has this, or even flips it off the top, you know, whatever, that could be.
You can cash in. You can cash in. Yeah,
it could be.
Because it doesn't say to a maximum of. Yeah.
you know, here we go. So the game is going to be broken wide open. I think what we're seeing is that the different builds, army builds, will be more attractive because of the expansion of some of the deployment zones. There are certain mission special rules that of course, you know, we need to see how those are going to be chosen and played out, because there were multiple mission rules, special rules in our current edition, the Leviathan mission pack, that did not get taken very frequently.
That's correct.
These seem a little more, I guess, designed to be rotated through. So we'll see if that happens. We have not talked about the secret missions or anything yet. So why don't we take a break? We'll come back, talk about some of that, and also just some of the stuff we've been up to.
Sounds good.
See you in a second.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back talking about these brand new missions, Pariah Nexus. I wonder if it's going to change, you know, I guess, you know, there was a reason to be fighting in the Leviathan. Curious to see how the story gets moved along.
Me too.
Think about
it. Because it seems like Pariah Nexus was, what, the start of the last edition with the Necrons?
Yep, that was the starter box, I think.
We're turning back time, baby, and it's good. Much as with Magnus did nothing wrong. Silent King did nothing wrong. He was just trying to protect his space from chaos and or Tyranids. It's like, I'm back. I'm back to save my empire, baby. And the Imperium's like, you can't do that. That's something we would do. And yeah, here we are.
We would totally rewrite everyone's brain if we could. I appreciate that you have a perspective on that.
Thank you. So secret missions, guys. So at the end of the third battle round, starting with the player who had second turn, if your primary mission VP total is less than or equal to your opponent's, you can choose to undertake a secret mission. So there's the three dot points here. Secretly select one card from your secret mission deck and place it to one side face down. You cannot score more than 20 victory points from the primary mission card. Any excess VP awarded from above this maximum are lost. So if you score 21 somehow, it doesn't matter. You still get 20. At the end of the battle, reveal your secret mission card and to your opponent. If you achieved it, score the amount of VP discussed.
That's so really this important, though, considering there is a cap of primary of 50 points. So you are giving up 10 points in this somewhere, no matter what.
Mm. But these are a lot easier to achieve than the previous gambits, I would say, on the whole. And there are some here that you will already know you can't do. So there's the first one denotes you have to have your warlord in range of an objective marker in your opponent's
command
deployment zone.
Insertion.
Yeah.
This happens at the end of the battle. Your warlord is within range of one or more objective markers in your opponent's deployment zone that you control. And if you are to achieve that, you will get 20 victory points.
So, you know, at the end of the battle round, when you select this, if your warlord is dead, don't pick this one. Pretty clear.
That's how secret the mission is. He's taking it to his grave.
If your entire army's been destroyed and all you have is Canis Rex left and he's your warlord, and you're like, well, I'm going to be able to stomp him over to that objective at the end of the game. So I'll probably rip this one off the top and give it a crack.
You've got two goes at it, Sir Hector.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, that would be the funny point. They're like, haha, I killed Canis Rex. And like, Sir Hector's get me 20 points, baby.
That's right. Sloan Op has now activated his second abilities.
Yeah.
So that's one secret mission. Another secret mission is Shatter Cohesion. Into battle, there are no units from your opponent's army on the battlefield. That's one condition, 20 victory points. Or every unit from your opponent's army that is on the battlefield meets one or more of the following conditions. The unit is battle-shocked. The unit is below half strength. The unit is more than 3 inches away from all objective markers.
This one is cool. I like this one a lot. So this would be if your opponent has thrown everything against the wall and gotten a huge lead, but you're mincing them. They're throwing away units to get a big score lead. And you're like, well, I don't have time to catch them on primary, but I can slam this down, continue what I'm doing Scorched Earth style and trying to table them and try and catch them this way. And I think this is a really clever one.
It is, because, you know, we often talk about sometimes where you can grind yourself down, you know, basically run yourself across the cheese grater that is life to get all the victory points that you possibly can and make it to where your opponent is just not scoring. And this is a way for them to kind of flip it on you.
Well, I've been tabled in one games of 10th edition.
Yeah, having models at the end of the game has not been a prerequisite for winning or losing.
Yeah, correct. And so this will give someone interplay into that kind of situation, which I think is cool.
Next one is the unbroken wall in the battle. You control three or more objective markers that are not within your deployment zone. 20 VP. This seems
the easiest of the bunch.
Possible.
Yeah, this one seems like it's the easiest of the bunch. You need to have three units left at the end, and you need them to have units, but not. They can have units, they can have infinity units, but as long as you're holding three objectives, you get 20 victory points. So I think this is the easiest so far of the bunch, and easiest to plan around, because like you can be getting absolutely pantsed, you know, put in jail, unable to leave your deployment zone, but you know they're going to peter out at some point. They're still going to have, you know, probably a bunch of stuff left, but you're still going to have the majority of your force. And then at the bottom of turn, you just, especially like the bottom of turn five, because the person who goes second gets the first choice if they're going to do this. You can just straight flatline it for all the objectives and snatch 20 victory points.
Is this like flipping power to more to who's going second again?
It is again, yeah. But that's the thing though. The whole mechanic works off you knowing that you're down, and then the additional, you know, nuance to know how much you can catch up by, or what play that you have to close that gap.
Yeah, and then I guess also if you know this happens in the middle of the game where you choose to start moving for a secret mission, so you actually are giving information to your opponent as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, they know you no longer care about the primary. You are doing your own little thing. And there's only one of these, the unbroken wall, which is the one we're just talking about, that denotes actually the holding of objectives. Every other one is doing something completely different. So you can act like you don't care about it the entire time and then just jump on it last turn for the unbroken wall and get the 20 VP, which I think is cool.
Gotcha,
baby. Oh. You thought I was doing War of Attrition or something else?
War of Attrition might
be my favorite one.
Okay, hit us with it.
So it's, of course, the end of the battle. One or more battle line units from your army are within your opponent's deployment zone, and one of the following conditions apply. There are no battle line units from your opponent's army on the battlefield. Every battle line unit from your opponent's army that is on the battlefield is within your opponent's deployment zone. If you keep their battle line contained and or they brought an army that didn't have any, this one's actually pretty reasonable to do.
Oh, nice. So they're over there trying to dig you out, and you're... Yeah. Trying to figure out a way to scoop 20 victory points.
I think another cool mechanic that we may see one day in the future would be to, you know, and we've seen this with various modes in years gone by, where like if you took a certain unit as your warlord, it would make a certain, you know, other type of unit core. Probably the most famous one was in 5th edition, where if you took a war boss on a war bike, you got war bikers as essentially battle line would be the term now. Really. Those kind of mechanics would be really cool in this, but that's speculation.
I do feel like that last secret mission would go really well with the smoke and mirrors special rule. After both players have deployed their army, starting with the attacker, each player can place one unit from their army that is on the battlefield into strategic reserves, regardless of how many units are already in strategic reserves. And then there's like the little chart thingy. So just throw your battle line units in there and keep them safe. You know that you're going to try and make a play for that last secret mission.
Yeah, that's big.
Yeah, even that, it's some insurance for yourself, especially if you know your army, like how you normally play against, you know, XYZ army that you're facing in that moment. That's some good thinking.
So the actions is another. So there's, of course, we talked about probably the most impactful one of the actions clauses, because there's actually 7 dot points that delineate you being unable to do an action. Straight up, aircraft can't do it. Can't do an action if you're battle shocked. If you have an objective control of 0, which we've already denoted. So that one is kind of cool because there are more things in the game that reduce your objective control now. Chaos Spawn is one we've talked about on another show, Paul, because they have, and this may get FAQ'd, but they have an aura, or I can't remember if it's aura or engagement range, that they reduce your objective control by 1, and it doesn't say to a minimum of 0. So a minimum of 1, rather. So they can reduce you from 1 to 0 and make you unable to do actions.
Yeah, that seems intentional to me. I don't.
I think so, because so many other ones have to a minimum of 0. So either they forgot it or it's exactly as intended.
Well, we'll see.
Can't do actions if you're in engagement range of one or more enemy units unless it's a Titanic character unit. And then you can't do actions if you advanced or fell back, and you can't do an action if you are not eligible to shoot this phase, including units that have already been selected to shoot this phase. So there are quite a few terms and conditions for doing actions, which I think is only for the best.
Good points, and I'm glad you highlighted that. That's Now, of course, where the real nuance in these missions come is playing them and how they interact with your armies and, of course, your opponent trying to do their own thing. But those are like the high notes of things. And I'm thinking it is actually pretty high. I'm looking forward to this change and seeing how, like, my, I know that I build armies that try to, you know, find out how to solve for the problems. I don't know what the new problems are yet. I'm excited.
These changes feel very much like the Age of Sigmar changes to the General's Handbook that we've had all throughout third edition. And each time a new General's Handbook would come out, like, the entire game would feel fresh and new. And, like, even coming down to having different deployment zones on different missions and things, it just made it feel like a completely different game. And this feels exactly the same as that. I'm very excited to see how it shakes up the meta and to see if it brings maybe some new units out of people's collections that haven't been seeing so much play this edition so far. So I think it's going to be great.
Looking forward to it. I hope you all enjoy it as well. There's going to be lots of stuff out there. You know, there are, we'll be talking over the next couple of weeks about some new codexes coming up. Depth of Sortos, Gene Sealer Cult. Like, there's big things happening in Warhammer right now.
Yeah, it feels like things are really picking up for 10th edition. Like, we've had, up until this point, we had, what, 5 codexes? And then in the last, like, what, month and a half, we've had another 5 codexes. Well, at least it feels like. Please don't check me on my numbers. I threw them off the cuff. I know what I'm doing. Or don't. See.
Yeah. Well, they got to keep their eyes and ears peeled for all the stuff coming. So anyway, what else y'all been up to? Now we can take a minute and just talk about what we've been up to.
Oh, I've been busy, boy. I'm painting up a storm for a very awesome event called TerraCon that I've been trying to go to for most years since I entered the scene. And yeah, it's going to be a fantastic one. I'm taking a much fluffier army than usual, which should be cool. Wielding a Bane blade and no regrets.
Is that what you're painting the Scions for?
Yeah, I for the longest time. So I had about, what, 3,000 or 4,000 points of Scions in 8th edition, 7th edition. And I sold those off because they were pretty roughly painted by my current standards. And I've always kind of wanted to do the box art because my entire Cadian army is painted like box art, true Cadian. And so I kind of wanted box art Scions. So when I sold those, it was always with the intent of, you know, doing another army of them and painting them up. Following the beautiful Duncan Rhodes's tutorial, which is now very old, as am I. And yeah, it's been a joy to paint them. The blue and cream or the blue and khaki is a great freaking scheme. I like it a lot with, you know, red accents.
That does sound really good. Tanya, what about you?
I'm taking actually a little bit of break from painting. I feel like I was just going nonstop. So I'm just enjoying my painted models that I have, like, just enjoying my collection and not worrying too much about stressing about expanding it. Mm-hmm. But I played in a team tournament, which was ridiculously fun. We did completely random pairings. We just brought, like, a little token to represent our faction.
Brave.
And basically, like, pulled it out of a bag and then rolled a dice for whatever table number we got.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it was super fun. And because we all just sort of, like, huddled the night before and was like, do we actually care? Because we were all kind of feeling a little burnt out with competitive play. So everybody's like, nah, we don't really care. So that was our tactics. And we came second out of, I think, 14 teams or something. So that was big for us. We are also team participant. So, like, you know, we're just there for the green ribbon, essentially. So for us coming second, that was super huge. And then thank you. And then I'm helping out with a narrative tournament that Play on Tabletop is hosting in a couple weeks. So I've been, you know, like, fielding questions for people and sort of demystifying the tournament experience for people who have not experienced sort of organized play before. And I've been writing actually a bit of lore for that as well. So that's been really fun to write short stories for all the different factions, and they've been really well received. So that might be something that I sort of dabble into more seriously in the future.
That's excellent. And thank you for doing that for the community and trying to bring more people into the event space and, you know, making it more open and inviting.
Yeah, like, I'm really excited for the people who chose this as their first kind of organized play event, because the Pleon guys are all like super nice people. Like as you see them on battle reports, that's exactly who they are. And the community itself has a lot of returning folks that went to this event last year who have really stepped up and are kind of like tournament organizers light and really helping these people feel like welcomed into the community. And yeah, it's going to be a great event. I'm really, really excited.
Yeah. Good luck with it. Or break a leg. Sounds like entertainment, so gotta use the showbiz talk. I'm also getting ready for a couple of big tournaments and taking Death Guard for the team. And turns out I needed more Plague Marines. So over the course of the last few days, I've painted 15 Plague Marines so far.
That's a lot.
Well, you can kind of assembly line them. I probably got about another 10 I need to get done. And this is to supplement what I already had. So it's where, it's where the squad numbers sound irregular. Trying to fill in the right, you know, combination of special weapons and stuff for the squads. We'll see how that goes. Of course, may change my list anyway, but, you know, I needed more Plague Marines, so I don't mind doing this, and I've had a fun time doing it. Basically, tried to figure out, like, pressing myself, how much can I get done over the course of this weekend? And I was pretty impressed with how far I got. So, nice to know it's still in me. Looking forward to playing with them. Of course, playing with the team, playing some 40K on the tabletop.
Oh, another thing that I did, I ran my first event, you guys.
Oof, big deal.
Did. It was just a 12-person Age of Sigmar RTT, but unfortunately for me, I had to be a ringer. I really didn't want to be because it was my first time, but I was so organized that I basically just handed my clipboard off to a staff member at the store and said, like, do the stuff on the board. Here are my checklists. Go. And yeah, it went super, super smoothly. Everybody was just very pleasant and amazing. And I'm looking forward to doing another one.
Very nice. What ended up winning in the event?
Oh, Slaves to Darkness. I ended up taking it. And also got Best Painted because the person is... he also got Best Sports. So like... shout out to this guy because everybody loves him first off. And he really, he went in wanting the Best Painted award. That's what he wanted. Like everything else I think for him was just sort of like icing on the cake, but he really is just everything that we want our community to be. It's very nice. Mm. He's very welcoming to new players, amazing painter, just the nicest person you'll ever meet. So it was really good for him to take those home. And then we did a random draw prizes for in-store credit. So he only got $25 gift certificate for getting Best Sport. And then the big bounty went out basically as door prizes. Yeah.
Nice. Very cool.
Yeah.
We would call that in the biz a triple threat. And exactly, you are exactly correct. Everything everyone should aspire to be.
That's right. And I think for our first time, I think it was great because we're such a tight-knit community. And I think everybody sort of knew in their heart of hearts that that was going to happen. So nobody was exactly shocked, except, of course, the player that won all of them, because nice people always seem to be shocked at that. But yeah.
Oh, very cool. All right. Well, that's our show this week. It's a pleasure talking with you all, running down the new missions, looking forward to seeing how they play out. I'm looking forward to talking about it more and seeing how this evolves things, shakes it up, keeps things fresh. We'll see you on next week.
Exactly right, Matt. Bye.
Good night.
Bye, everybody.
Prospect scan is clear. I think they're gone. For now.